Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This week, I'm joined by Asia Matos. Asia, how you doing?
Doing awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure. Gosh, Asia and I have been talking off and on since before we joined Tiny Seed, I guess. So like 6 months or so, and came really highly recommended to me from a fellow kind of friend in the SaaS space. And so Asia, do you want to give folks kind of the quick elevator pitch on kind of who you are and what you do?
I'd love to. My name is Asia, and I am the CEO and founder of Demand Maven, where we help early stage startups reach their very first growth milestones. So think first 100 customers to the first 1,000 customers. My background is in marketing and demand gen for startups and for product companies. So I feel like it was a natural transition starting Demand Maven, but I've been working with founders pretty closely ever since.
Awesome. I think I would love your job because I love the time, like as a business owner, the time I get to just really geek out on marketing with Denise, our marketing director. I'm just like, oh, this is so cool. And attribution, which we're going to touch on later, and funnels and customer acquisition channels and all this kind of stuff, I just think is wonderful. Like, I think I'm turning into a marketer at heart. So I'm really excited to dig into this. And we're calling this episode Marketing 201, because this is not for the faint of heart. This is for folks who have some experience with marketing. And if you don't, that's okay. You'll hear things maybe that we might not define, or that might be a little kind of, I don't want to say over your head, but a little past kind of where you might be in your journey right now. But the goal here really with Asia is she has a lot of experience with helping folks, like she said, get to and past that first milestone. And for a lot of people I know, Asia, like that milestone is, you know, 7 figures in their business, right? I mean, these are not, getting to $1,000 in MRR, right?
Yeah, exactly. And going back to what you said about how cool is this job, I will say that my absolute favorite thing is just seeing the variety and the array from B2B to B2C to everything from like pure SaaS to you've got like a fully scaled out sales team and you've got a demo model and even down into freemium. I mean, just the array has been, it's been amazing. But what's interesting is that a lot of it is the same problem over and over and over again, which yeah. I'm sure we'll probably touch on a little bit today.
Do you find that the same problem kind of has a different flavor for everybody, or are the problems kind of different?
I find it's usually in the same vein. It's usually in, we need to diversify our acquisition strategy, you know, or we've got something working, but now we've got to figure out what are some of the other things that could work for us. And then of course, looking down the funnel. So beyond just acquisition, what are some of the things that we can be doing around activation? And then of course, retention, because what's, especially like as a marketer and even a founder's job. So I love hearing whenever founders love marketing, because in a way they kind of take on a lot of that too. But then you start looking at the entire life cycle of your business. And as you grow, that life cycle, not only does it expand, but it actually repeats across different segments of your market. So that's what I think is so cool about marketing. And that's why it helps a team at least scale really fast, if it's working well, of course. But mm-hmm. I find that's pretty much like the same journey across pretty much all the companies that I've worked with and for. And it's just a matter of figuring out either what's broken or what's missing. And after you figure that out, then it's you know, you're just kind of guiding along the path.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. I mean, I can tell you from inside the Tiny Seed companies, the other 9 companies in this batch, all of us have the same problem, essentially. And that's kind of what you're talking about, which is, I just want a bunch more customers. You know, my product is good. We have a pretty good degree of product market fit. Now, how do we just get 20 times the number of customers or something? And so I think that's kind of like where we're going to start is, so both Dave and I are kind of platform dependent businesses. So mine is not dependent, but we've gotten where we are in a large degree based on kind of our platform. So me and WordPress with our podcasting plugin, and Dave owns a Shopify app that helps with abandoned cart recovery. And so I think one of the questions that we both have is like, okay, we've got this, I'll say, organic platform channel, right? So like the platform is there, we're in the platform, we get some customers from that, but that's a hard thing to scale and to, mm-hmm. to like pour gas on the fire, right? And so I think both of us are looking at like this and saying, okay, this is great, but I both want to diversify and I want something that I can accelerate, right? Like mm-hmm. I want mm-hmm. to be able to spend $10,000 this month on AdWords and get $12,000 out the other end, which you just can't do with a WordPress plugin.
Yeah.
For folks like in these kinds of situations, do you find the approach to finding a new and scalable marketing channel different than a quote regular founder?
The short answer, no. I actually don't find that the process is dramatically different, but I think that the mindset is different. And for an early stage founder, so the founder who's trying to get to 100, you know, the 10K MRR or even like the 50 or 100K MRR, depending on how you want to define early stage, the mindset is usually like, I just need to figure out what tactics work. When your product ultimately depends on another's platform and or ecosystem, you're really looking at everything within that ecosystem. But the other mindset, I guess, that you need to have is actually more on the visionary side and more of just the, where do you see this going market-wise in general? Because you can go ahead and start setting up campsites, if you will, like outside of that in some of the other parts of the market. Or you can think about it much more like, what are some of the other watering holes that I just need to make sure that I'm appearing in and that I'm tapping? Because all of those things combined will, in theory at least, continue to help you gain market share. So if you're dependent on a Shopify, for example, and everything that you're doing is in that Shopify ecosystem, I would be looking for things that are secondary to that specific ecosystem. Other people talking about Shopify or partnering with Shopify that you can also partner with. But the essential idea, though, is what are some of the places that I can either build a relationship with or tap that bring me the big waves and droves of customers? And it's a very different mindset than very early stage, obviously. But, and this is very common too, especially if you are in accelerator programs or even in smaller investment programs like a Tiny Seed or like a Techstars. But usually the big onus, if you will, or the emphasis is on what are the other partnerships and or channels can you build now that a year or two from now, it will give you an extra 10% of the market. And when you start thinking at that scale, that's when you really start thinking in terms of, oh, not only gaining market share, but it's no longer percentages, but it's X increases. So now you're looking at like the 10X growth, which does sound so cliche and very tired, but that is kind of where you start seeing the big waves of customers. So I think the mindset is really what changes. I think the approach is still the same. You're still at the end of the day looking at your market, and at the end of the day, still constantly searching for the key players, the key influencers, and just the key partnership opportunities that might be available to you that you just don't know about.
Interesting. Do you view things like partnerships and co-marketing and things like that as, it sounds like a really good way to get that exponential growth. We won't call it 10X, but exponential growth. As opposed to, you know, we've been exploring paid acquisition, Facebook and AdWords. We also do a fair amount of content marketing and looking at kind of some different flavors of that. But I view, well, especially content marketing as not something that in the short term is going to double our business. Do you view things like partnerships and some of these other things as like those levers that can really make a big difference on the acquisition side?
100,000,000%. And this is also where marketing really expands beyond just focusing on digital channels. This is where marketing starts to get more into that strategic development or strategic business development, and just overall thinking about where is the business going and where are we trying to, where are we ultimately trying to make an impact, and who do we know who can help us get there? This is where you do start seeing that exponential growth. I like that way better than the 10X. but yes, and that is absolutely part of, at least in my opinion, part of marketing's job as well. Maybe not necessarily to own the entire relationship, but absolutely support it. And those are the kinds of just strategic planning and that visionary thinking that has to happen between the marketing department, ideally also like if there is a sales team, the sales team, and then of course this is the executive leadership team. And then even potentially on the investor side as well, if investors are partnerships that I mean, yes, like to execute on them, like you're probably looking at something marketing related, but identifying those from the get-go that can help you drive some of that, not only just awareness, but obviously at the end of the day, the demo, the trial, the install or whatever it is. But yes, I think that they're critical. And I think that there's something that I love that Rob actually said this on Twitter the other day, Rob Walling, but I believe he said, founders need to be thinking in 5 years and not just 5 months. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely what I push for when we're looking at, we're trying to get to 1 million. Like, those are the kinds of things that I'm looking for. I'm looking for what are the big partnership and strategic opportunities in the market itself that we're not present in, that we're not tapping, that we're not really building around. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I would add to that, and this is a little outside of the marketing realm, but as a founder, I put product in that long-term, how can we get to exponential growth, trajectory, right? So like product and pricing, kind of those two go together for me, is like the value of the tool and the things you can offer there. That's another lever for us to say, like, okay, right now we are just a podcast hosting platform, but in the future we might be a who knows what, right? And so like we look at this from a marketing perspective of like, okay, we have affiliates and what are we doing with our affiliates to really ratchet up their involvement and help them be successful along with us and other influencers in the space. But then on the product side, we also say like, okay, we charge $19 a month for our lowest plan now. What if we could charge $1,000 a month for something, right? And that really starts moving the needle. But then that kind of takes you back to square one with like acquisition, because then you're talking to a totally different type of customer. So I think that's like a balancing act that we're going through a little bit right now. And I think other people who are evolving their business to say like, okay, I've kind of gotten what I want here. I see the market, like you're saying, moving in this direction. We need to go up market. We need to go enterprise. To do that, we're going to need to talk to enterprise customers, like, you know, a B2B relationship, but also the product needs to be ready for that too. So I think it's just one more thing to make our lives difficult.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a really amazing framework by Brian Balfour that I live and die by. I think it's to me, at least, it explains this in the best way, but it's article series all about why product market fit. It's no longer just about product market fit. You also still have to think about the channels through which you're actively promoting your product. And then of course the model that you have that enables the market to purchase your product. And in the early days, so much of us are obsessed with that product market fit. You know, do we have it? When do we know that we have it? And the answer is always like, trust me, you'll know. And then of course, right, after that, it's really thinking about, okay, cool. Well, what are some of the other channels? And I think what a lot of teams forget about is that channels, it doesn't necessarily just have to be these like digital marketing channels. They can also be offline and they can also be relationship based. And I think that that's so important to remember. And then of course, if you're more on the technical side of like your product is maybe catering more to a technical audience, the integration and API space is also something to be thinking about that can help you also growth levers to pull. But yeah, I definitely think that when it comes to marketing 201, you're definitely thinking outside of the scope that you're in or outside of the context that you're in. But actually, I think that the other part too is you are also taking a much finer tooth comb, if you will, through the existing customer base that you have. And sometimes one of the best ways to figure out new acquisition channels is to just go to your existing customers, especially in the newer ones that you've acquired over time. But yeah, I think that there's definitely like the more strategic visionary approach. And then there's also still the, let's focus on the customers. Let's like figure out what's new there that we didn't know before.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like trying to stay within the, I'll say like shorter to medium term, because sure, I think, you know, we have the opportunity to think in years. One, because we took a small amount of investment. Other, because we're, you know, a bigger company and paying all the bills and all this kind of stuff. We're not big like HubSpot for sure, but like, you know, we're paying the bills. And so like we can afford to think in a little bit longer term, but we also try to think in things like, what can I do this week to really move the needle? And one of the constant, really healthy tensions between Denise and I and our marketing director is like, what is the balance of priority between organic acquisition channels like content marketing, podcasting, YouTube, things like that, and paid acquisition? And I know this is something that you and I talked about, gosh, again, 6 months ago, is like, what does this balance need to be for us to achieve kind of the growth goals that we have? This is going to be different for everybody, but how do you think about this when you're talking to your founder clients?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I love this question because it's a question of two of the most critical parts of this, you know, startup or SaaS journey that you might be on, but really it's all about time and money and also scope. So it's really the iron triangle at the end of the day. Scope meaning, you know, do you have the resources available or what have you? But time and money are always the two things that come up when it comes to paid versus organic. And organic is one of those things that you invest in SEO, you invest in content marketing, and you invest in those things. And in terms of direct acquisition, you likely do see it 6 months from now, or, you know, potentially even longer, depending on how competitive it is at the keywords that, you know, you're going after. And there's ways that, I hate to say hack, but there's ways that you can speed up this process. And there's all kinds of, you know, tactical things that I'm sure that we could talk about there. But what's interesting about paid is that paid is as soon as you have a landing page copy, as soon as you have a funnel built and ready, in theory, you can turn on paid today and generate results potentially. The way that I like to think about it is, well, first, I do anticipate not only what are the annual goals, but what are the quarterly goals? Because there's absolutely a business case for investing in organic search or SEO now, knowing that if we do it well and we do it right, it'll pay off in about a year. Paying off meaning we're increasing traffic month over month by at least 10%, maybe even 5%, if that's that's usually more realistic, I think, for bootstrap companies. But even a 10% increase in organic search traffic month over month is still nothing to be shy about. That is something that pays dividends over years, assuming it's targeted and it's well done. But paid advertising is also, it can at least be lucrative depending on your average contract value. So if your ACV, and this is at least the business case that I make for it in the early days, if the ACV makes sense, like if you've got an ACV that is more than $1,000 a year, let's say, then paid advertising could likely work for you as long as your buyback period makes sense. I like to use both paid advertising and investing in organic search. One, because I know that without both, we end up doing a lot of guessing about what's going to work content-wise. But then also, I've never, ever, ever heard a founder ever say, man, I'm so glad we waited 3 years to invest in search organic search. Right. So what I find is I like to leverage paid media and just paid advertising in general to test content ideas and also to, yes, to drive prospects into the funnel, whether that's your free trial, your demo, what have you. And then, of course, I also do like to use paid advertising on the retargeting side. So if we already have a little bit of traffic or if we already have some clear traction in our product, then let's just make sure that whatever our free trial to paid or whatever that conversion rate looks like, that that's healthy and that it's supporting any onboarding activities, etc. If I'm doing a paid campaign and it is to generate opportunities, if it's never been done before, then it's important to approach those as tests. If you have done it before with success and you know that it can output either a sensible buyback period or a very sensible just ROI, just flat out ROI. Although I will say it is very hard to get ROI in the early days, but just purely because of time in the market. But anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
I do like to use paid in that way. In terms of how do we balance those things, I do think that that ultimately depends on what are the goals, how aggressive are they, and when do we expect to meet those goals? That is where... If we need to double in 3 months, then I would say, okay, well, yeah, like let's focus on paid and probably even like ABM or some sales outbound prospecting effort. But if in 1 to 2 years we're looking at goals and saying, okay, well, we want here, then maybe 60% of time is focused on organic search and building up the demand gen engine there, and then on the other side we'll be running some paid campaign tests until we get something that we know works.
I like it. I like the hard numbers. I'm going to ask you for a couple more hard numbers here. One is, what do you feel for a sort of bootstrap or for, you know, a company like us that took a little bit of money is a reasonable payback period in SaaS for paid acquisition?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So ideally, you're getting 3 months back. So the amount that you're spending and for the leads that are converting, however much that 3 month time span is worth, ideally, your cost to acquire that lead does not exceed that 3 month buyback period per lead. Now, it is very likely that if you're running your very first paid campaign, you've never done it before, or maybe you did, but it was awful. it's going to take about 2 to 3 months to optimize that anyway. You can get it down to a month depending on the channel, but unless you're really working it and watching it and you're actively contributing, you know, new copy or new landing pages to it, it does take about 2 to 3 months. But ideally, you've got a 3-month buyback period. Now, I will say that I have seen buyback periods as long as 6 months to a year. I do think that that's kind of where it does depend on your ultimate ACV, because it just might be too early, too expensive, or you just need a slightly different approach to that paid media channel. But if you start getting into the 6 month to a year range, you either need more time or the actual strategy around that paid channel needs to be different. Maybe the funnel that you designed isn't necessarily the best funnel, or the right offer or the right content that you put in front of that particular audience. It could also be segmenting challenges. So figuring out where and, you know, when that part is kind of broken, it really does depend on the channel. And then, of course, like your strategy in general. But I'd say you're looking at 3 months. And if it's longer than that, then some optimization probably needs to happen.
Yeah, super interesting. So kind of just for folks out there, so if you're charging $30 a month, you can have a total like paid customer acquisition cost of $90 all the way to acquire a paying customer. So 3 months at $30 a month. Yeah. I mean, this is hard. We've been playing around with paid acquisition for several months now since the summer. And in some channels we're there, we're at the 3 month place, and at some that nice. We want to play in, we're definitely not. We're at 12 months, which is, it's not embarrassing because we're working very hard at it, but it's tough to crack. You know, something that we play around with a lot, which is something I'd love to get your opinion on, is kind of where in the customer buying journey we try to inject ourselves. So, you know, some people spend a lot of, like I was reading an article about Ahrefs, where the only place they spend money on paid acquisition is to promote blog posts. So mm-hmm. they say, like, let's just get our word out to everybody. And then those people will kind of filter through the natural funnel that we've built. Other people target people really specifically, like in AdWords, when they're ready to make a buying decision, figuring they can convert people right away. I think for the latter, SaaS, in SaaS, that's a lot more difficult. Is there, like, when you're thinking about developing a paid acquisition strategy, considering the buying journey, are there kind of like rules of thumb or things that people should think about when they're considering kind of where to inject themselves in that process?
Yeah, I love this question, because it definitely comes back to actually having a customer journey map or a buyer journey map, and making sure that for every single stage of the buyer journey, you have a very clear understanding of exactly what someone is going through when they're even not only like figuring out the problem that they have in the first place, but they're also actively looking for solutions. And in some journeys, you do end up with, well, first of all, let me just say that customer journeys, on the one hand, they do follow a very clear, similar pattern. On the other hand, some of those stages of the journey happen so lightning fast that mapping them out and stretching them out almost becomes nebulous in a way. I think in terms of offering concrete actionable advice around this is know it by heart. And if you know that by heart, you know exactly what that psychological and just behavioral, what those activities look like and what that journey looks like, it is going to be relatively easy for you to come to the table with, okay, I've noticed that a lot of the searching activity or just researching activity happens in this stage, and it's about these specific things. Let's make sure that we can appear at that stage. And then you can decide if there's enough search demand for that, then maybe we can try AdWords. And if you find that so much of the journey, at least from like your product and what you're offering perspective, so much of your journey actually happens very top of the funnel, then doing what like an Ahrefs does makes a ton of sense. Because I anticipate that the way that they understand their buyer journey, the people who are looking for a solution or are looking for an alternative solution, they either already generally understand what Ahrefs does in the market. I would be surprised if people don't know the brand by now, but I think that makes sense. They can probably assume that anyone who is an SEO or a marketer, that they will understand the value that Ahrefs provide, and all that they have to do is just convince them that they're the right tool. It's very different than I'm educating the market about a problem and here's a solution. By the way, we're a solution, buy mine. Now you're aware. Now I just have to make sure that you come back or, right. or convert. But I think understanding that journey is really the is, to me at least, is the critical part. Whenever I'm designing a paid media campaign or even a strategy, something that is going to be ongoing and then we're going to double down on this particular channel, I'm always thinking about, well, what is that channel? And is that a top of the funnel channel or is that a bottom of the funnel channel? Like, is that something that all I got to do is just figure out what the right keywords are and that's going to put my perfect customer in front of me? Or am I going to have to promote something that educates them first? And in terms of the journey, it's really just going to be all about, well, where are they right now, at any given time, at least? And that's something that with customer research and talking to customers on the regular about what was going on in the world before, you know, they found you, that's going to help you build that customer journey. And then also help you figure out, like, when did they realize that there was a problem? When did they start looking for a solution? What were the triggers around that? And that can actually help you not only figure out what content to produce around that, because we're assuming that you're going to do something, whether that's landing pages or whatever, but also what channel makes sense for that. Because ideally, talking to customers, you'll also kind of hear when they search for something or when they talk, ask a friend or what have you. That was not a super concrete answer, but I will say that when I'm designing that, I'm always pulling out that buyer journey. I can't not, like, it's impossible.
Yeah. And I think that, yeah, I mean, for a lot of us, different customers have different types of your customers have different buying journeys, and it's important to consider all those. And it's, you want to say, like, my best customers go through this one, and we're going to focus on acquiring more of those kinds of people. Yeah. That's at least what we do. You know, I think this is the place where the biggest difference comes between, like, SaaS and e-commerce is e-commerce can just say red Nike Air Jordans. I'm going to bid $20 on those and I'll convert half of those people, whatever it is. And they're, you know, $50 shoes or whatever. You can make your money back in two clicks, right? But in SaaS, well, we've seen at least that is very, very, very rare. When we focus really bottom of the funnel, it's very expensive and it just doesn't work as well. And so we've been focusing higher up in the funnel, knowing that we're spending some money now to promote our organic content and to get people in our world sooner, and then kind of a little bit of hoping that they convert later on. And we have, and this kind of leads into the attribution topic, but we have some way to know some of this, but it gets a little less certain the higher in the funnel you get to, which is tough.
Yeah. I think if there was, like, one thing I would say is just like a general rule of thumb when it comes to determining, like, what those channels are, or at least where, like, how do you figure out what to put in front of them at any given point, I think it does come down to, is your product relatively new and there aren't a ton of competitive alternatives, meaning, like, there, you don't really have any competitors, but you can assume that they also always have the pain, then you're really looking at either, like, more top of the funnel activity, or you're trying to figure out, are they searching for something that maybe isn't like exactly what our product is, but it's so similar and it's close enough that we could still pull them in anyway. And then you're looking at something like an AdWords, much more bottom of the funnel. But if they have no clue that you exist, they also maybe aren't as aware of the problem, then yeah, like you're looking at maybe more middle and top of the funnel channels. So you would be looking at something like a Facebook or an Instagram or a LinkedIn, depending on, you know, your market and where they hang out. But you're likely rallying around the problem as opposed to just immediately offering them a solution. And I think that's really the biggest question is, as a general rule of thumb, depending on your product, your market, your space, are there competitors or competitive alternatives? Then your marketing work is really either around educating them and rallying around the problem and offering solutions, or it's about saying, oh no, hey, like, there's actually already a solution that exists. We're the best one. You were just looking for us, you know, here it is. And we can obviously take you through the marketing journey from there, like on our site or whatever. I think that's really where I'm really determining, like, okay, what are my top of the funnel channels and what are my bottom of the funnel channels? And based off of what I know about the product and the market and the customer, do I have to do a whole lot of convincing or don't I? Or is it really just, there's already competitors. Now I just got to convince them that I'm the best one. Or it's, did you know that you had a problem? That's really kind of where...
Which is, that's really hard, right? Like, that's a really unenviable position to be in. And I know some people that are in there, and, like, to convince the world that they first have a problem and that you have a solution and that, oh, my solution is the best and, hey, you should buy my solution. whether that's four steps to go through res. I mean, in a competitive defined space like podcast hosting or abandoned cart recovery emails, people understand the problem and the solution and that there are alternatives. And now we just have to convince people that we are the problem. But ironically, we focus, you know, really like there at like, okay, I need a podcast. I want to start a podcast. I know I need a hosting provider. It's Castos or it's Libsyn, right? And mm-hmm. we focus there. We also focus way at the top, which is like, what is a podcast, right?
Oh, yeah.
What is a podcast? How to start a podcast? And I think Stelly from Close does the best of at this. Well, he does a very good job. I shouldn't say the best, but there's other, you look at a lot of the huge brands out there, you know, HubSpot and some of these people that just talk about the problem a ton and become an authority in their domain to where when you think about CRM, you think of close.com now and Stelly, or you think about, you know, HubSpot or whatever, just because you've seen them everywhere for years, right?
I think yeah.
that's not a bad strategy either for the long term.
Yeah, it's definitely a long-term strategy. And I totally agree. Approaching that marketing cycle, the one where you have to like educate people through the entire cycle, that you're right, that is it's a tough one. But I find even if you can figure out who are the early adopters and where do those people hang out, I think that that's kind of how you can shorten it a little bit. But yeah, that's really figuring out where do your customers lie, where does your market lie, and what makes sense for you to approach. I think that's definitely a balancing act. But then also both short term and long term. But yeah, that's my general rule though.
I like it. So on this show, we don't talk about how much money we make or religion or politics, but we do talk about marketing attribution, which I think is a hot topic equal to those other three. This is something we've been working on a lot in the last few months, and I feel like we suck big time at it. We are, so kind of our attribution stack, if you will, is we use obviously like Google Analytics. We have like pixels for Google and Facebook and Quora on our site now. We use a lot of UTM parameters mm-hmm. and we're just starting to use Amplitude to kind of put all this together in a single place. So Amplitude is like a product analytics tool and we're using it hopefully to kind of construct the whole kind of buyer journey through the funnel. So we're able to place kind of event points where if a person comes on our site and they do this and they do this and they do this and they become a customer, we're able to see that and we'll see where the fall off is along the way. But I feel like one of the big questions that we have is like paid acquisition or even organic. Like we want to be able to say better, you know, where do our best customers come from? Mm-hmm. And I feel like we just don't have a great approach to that. And so I'd love to hear your like, out of the box, cookie cutter, like, okay, for attribution, do this, this, and this, and you're going to kind of be decent at least, because that's our low water mark at this point.
Okay. So out of the box cookie cutter, I would say that first of all, I'm super happy that you got an actual tool that can help you with measuring something product related. And I think the first step is really when you're ready to invest into a tool like an Amplitude, a mixed panel, or what have you. I am not as familiar with Amplitude per se, but assuming that it can help with some kind of attribution, I would say you're really looking at and this does depend on your product cycle. So like how long does it take to convert into a paying customer? But you're either looking at a monthly or a quarterly just attribution reporting session, if you will. And what you're doing is at any given time, this could also be weekly if depending on your volume, but at any given time, you are identifying what were your absolute best customer cohorts, where do they come from? And you're looking at first and last touch attribution. And they're really, to me at least, there is definitely not a right or wrong answer here. It's much more about what were the trends over time and what were the consistencies, what were the patterns, and what were the outliers in terms of your absolute best customer cohorts? And then more generically, what were just the either weekly, monthly, or quarterly, just top attribution channels, of course, first touch, last touch, and how did those shake out? I do like to separate out the best customer cohort, but as a cohort, if you will. So maybe there's a list of customers that you just have in your mind, or you and the marketing team or the success team, like you talk about a specific core set of customers all the time. I think that there's like your, man, these people are great, like whatever that list is, and figuring out how did they find you from a digital perspective. I do think though, it does get a little different if and when you get a sales team, but just because the sales team is obviously going to like not only have like their own outbound prospecting activities potentially, but then also they might actually, you might actually be looking at like more conferences and things like that. So that in CRM, at least they might also be taking or tracking where they discovered that lead or how they met them or what have you. So understanding at least from a sales perspective, what does attribution look like there? There is a tool that I do love to use. It's not often that I get to use this in this way, but just because it's on the pricier side. So most early stage companies aren't quite ready for this unless they're funded. But HubSpot actually does, in my opinion, it does a great job of showing you not only trends and patterns over time, but actually helping you run attribution on closed revenue, which is really the hardest thing from a SaaS perspective. It is easy to set up a goal in like Google Analytics and to, you know, track events and figure out where they came from. But when it comes to who are your best paying customers, that can be tough. And you do need a tool. Either you need a tool that can help you with that, like an Amplitude or a HubSpot, or you got to do a lot of Google hacking, which is absolutely fine if you put in the effort. And I have personally not been down that road as a marketer. I usually have access to something, but that is an option. So there are some people who really just go ham on Google Analytics and they figure out how to pipe in that data, and kudos to them. I'm sure there's tons of articles about how to do that. But yeah, I'm at any given time though, I'm looking at first and last touch. I'm looking at patterns and of course outliers. And ideally you've got a special customer cohort that you're constantly looking back to.
Cool. So I have two questions about that. One is around first and last touch. And the other question is about defining that kind of ideal customer cohort. Let's start with the first and last touch first. I am of the opinion that the like first touch is the most important, right? So for, you know, background, first touch is like, where did people originally find you? Last touch is what was the thing they did right before they became a paying customer? For me, like first touch is the most important because like if we have a Facebook ad and they come and they read a blog post and they sign up for an email and then the email converts them over to being a paying customer, that's fine. But that's already there. That's not something I can really affect. So I feel like first touch is more important than last touch. I also don't know how to track both in something like Amplitude. It doesn't give you that, that choice.
Gotcha. Okay.
Do you feel like both are important, I guess, is kind of the question?
I do feel like both are important. So, and the reason why I do is because first touch really, to me at least, speaks to the top of the funnel and like just the overall awareness. So if you want to figure out like, what are you doing from like an awareness perspective that's really working, or at least giving you a customer segment that you're proud of, that you really like, they're paying you money, it's awesome, they're not churning, then yeah, first touch is great because you can run the first touch report. You can figure out what was that top of the funnel activity that we did that was great. Last touch is much more bottom of the funnel. And I do care a lot about bottom of the funnel in the early days, just purely because it really helps to know from a funnel perspective, at least, what was the last thing that they engaged in, because that tells me what to drive all of my top of the funnel to, or at least what to make sure is part of the funnel in some kind of way. If I can at least impact that. What's really funny about all of this, of course, is that customers will take their own journey no matter what. But I think if awareness and if top of the funnel is a challenge, then yeah, first touch is going to make a lot of sense. And focusing on first touch is going to make a lot of sense. But I do find that you need both, because sometimes the marketing funnel can, in a way, get away from you. And if you don't really know what the last touch is, then it's tough to say like, oh man, like that email newsletter did actually impact a lot of revenue, but we stopped doing it for whatever reason because we didn't believe in it or whatever. Sometimes you can let things go that are actually still important if you're not paying attention to the bottom of the funnel as well. But it really does, of course, depend. I hate to put caveats around everything, but it does kind of depend on the customer and the journey. But I think if troubleshooting awareness is something that you're focused on, then yeah, first touch is going to be your best friend for a while.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And if your funnel is predictable, then, you know, worrying about last touch is maybe not as important. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So the other part of about attribution is like identifying this ideal cohort. And so I think in our listeners, we had an episode kind of about marketing attribution a couple weeks ago, and we had a bunch of people email in and offer suggestions and feedback and stuff like that. And I appreciate everybody's offering help to me because I'm still kind of clueless about this. But one thing I still don't feel like I understand well is, okay, we get this data, now we have Amplitude and we get UTM parameters and we pipe that into Amplitude. And so we know kind of where people come from and what they do. But then I don't know, like, I want to be able to say this Facebook ad has an average lifetime value of $372. Whereas this blog, people that came from this blog post have an average lifetime value of $712. And to do that, I need to get like Stripe or ProfitWell or something piped into Amplitude and tie those two ends of the kind of string together, right?
Right.
And that's just what I need to do.
Okay. So I'm not going to lie. I think that level of attribution, it is possible, but I think that it's tough for me to say that that is going to maybe answer the ultimate question, which maybe, you know, back to you. So what is the number one question you're trying to answer with that? Is it, what is the right messaging, or what was the right timing of that specific ad that led to that revenue, or like,
Yeah, I guess. So like where we are is saying like, we get cohort based kind of analysis from Google Analytics pretty easily. UTM parameters say, okay, this group of people came and they started trials, whatever. But then it stops there, right? And so we have to kind of connect the dots from there, from like people came from this source, you know, first touch, right? Did this thing, started a trial, then nothing about like churn and lifetime value, or right, even right. trial to paid conversion ratio, because we just kind of assume like on average, we convert at 15%. Paid, I would assume, is worse than organic, but I don't know how much worse. I don't know how much worse by channel. And I certainly don't know how much worse by campaign or ad set, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe I want too much, but that's okay.
Well, I will say that from a campaign and a channel level, yes, like you absolutely can do that. Hooking up like a Stripe or something like that probably could work like into Amplitude. I do know that, not to like totally plug HubSpot, but I do know that HubSpot will actually be able to do that because it also integrates with all of your paid media channels in a similar way that I think a lot of marketing automation tools at least do today. But it would actually be able to tell you all the way down to the campaign that what either generated or influenced revenue. But I do think that, let's say that neither of those are options, you might be looking at some point at a data integration platform just in your future. I find that when companies hit a certain scale, tools like Segment and Hull become critical to just like understanding not only attribution, but being able to pull those customer cohorts into those customer segments based off of a number of data points. Data integration at that point does kind of become critical for successful companies. Or I don't want to say successful companies, for companies at scale that need that kind of data understanding. So you might be looking at something like that, or you might be looking at like a data integration platform or trying to figure out, because these are ultimately marketing questions, is there a marketing platform that you might need to be looking at? So like a HubSpot, or I'm sure that there are others that do something similar, and they can actually look at not only what paid channel, but like even like the specific copy of the ad. I know that HubSpot definitely does that out of the box. So
yeah, no, I talked to Jordan. I talked to Jordan from CardHook pretty regularly, and he was telling me, oh yeah, I asked him about the saturation thing. He's like, oh yeah, it's just built into HubSpot. I was like, oh geez.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, highly recommend awesome. It. If it's part of the budget, which if it's not, totally understand, you know, you'll absolutely get there. But if those kinds of questions become something that actively plagues you and prevents you from making good decisions around paid, then yes. And also organic too, like not just paid, but both really. Yeah. I would be looking at something like that because it would just kill all the birds with one stone, which sounds really morbid, but.
No, I hear you. So, you know, I don't know that we kind of have this problem. It's kind of a thing that I want to have fixed. I don't know that we have a problem around this. Cause I mean, we do make kind of sort of poorly educated guesses about a lot of this stuff. And so that kind of irks me that like, we're probably wasting money that we don't need to be. Mm. And so I think to some degree, all of us have a version of this problem. But for folks who are, you know, we're whatever, relatively small still, and just starting out, like if you don't have this kind of data integration, you're not figuring out how to pipe Stripe into Amplitude or something like that. How do you then kind of figure out from a, like an attribution perspective, but back to that cohort thing? So like my best customers, how do you know who they are in a tool like Mixpanel or Amplitude or Google Analytics? Or how are you kind of grouping those people together to then go back to say, where did they come from?
Yeah. Okay. So there's two parts to this. There's the quantitative side, which is the hard numbers. So the lifetime value. Maybe this is also just months that they've been a customer. You're either looking at time, lifetime value, or some combination of both. I'm going to assume that you're using some kind of subscription metrics. If you're not, then we've got an analytics debt problem to solve. But assuming that you're using some kind of subscription metrics, you can pretty easily export your list of customers with their LTV. And from there, the qualitative side to this is out of the people who are just like far, like, so there's like your average, but for the outliers, the ones who far exceed the average LTV, from there, it's going to be all about the qualitative side. So, and this sounds, I don't want to say awful, but it sounds like super basic, but who do you like? Who comes into your support channel and you're like, man, you're not a pain in my ass. Like, I'm actually really happy to talk to you and like help fix your problem. You know what I'm talking about? Because when you have a certain, when you have a certain amount of customers, you get to a place where you've got your favorites and you've got your, oh my God, I never want to, please don't come through our channel, but like also keep paying, like don't cancel. So you've got those. And assuming that you've got some kind of team, I really do like to do what I call customer teardowns. And it is literally this activity. It's exporting that list of customers. It's focusing on a very specific LTV, or at least like an average of that. And then we go through and we talk about the ones that we really feel like love the product, and we hear from them. And it's not constantly like everything is burning and everything is on fire. And from a qualitative perspective, we're really going through and we're, I don't want to say like we're picking and choosing our favorites, but in a way it is like that. The second thing that we're doing, of course, is we're also categorizing like their titles, their industry. I'm assuming that you're B2B, or maybe persona if you're B2C. And LinkedIn is a wonderful thing. Like, you can do all this either manically, manually or actually manically.
Freudian slip, yeah.
Yeah. But you can actually do all this without bugging your customer about anything. From there, though, you ideally will end up with a list of email addresses that, assuming that you can do this inside of Amplitude, I don't know, but you could drop that into a tool like Amplitude and say, okay, I really want to understand this specific set of data, whether that's, I don't know, customer ID, maybe it's by that, depending on what you've got piping into the platform.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a mixture of both. If you've got thousands of customers, then this activity really becomes more of a time. Like, I would time box it. So maybe you're only looking at the last month or even the last week. Or it could actually be that you're looking 6 months ago because you've built a relationship with a very specific cohort of people and they signed up all this time or what have you. Like, you could time box it if you've got a giant list. You could also, if you've got a customer success team, just go to them and say, like, I need you to pick 20 to 50 of your absolute favorite customers in this category. So if you've got truly scale, then you could approach it that way. I find that in the early days, you don't have thousands of customers, and it's actually really easy to do this activity, even if it's only like a couple hundred.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a mix of both. And from there, it's going to be, I know at least some of my clients solve this with, they ultimately have a database, like maybe I think most people are using SQL or something to that effect, but they are piping data into a database somewhere. So they're able to just query that specific list of emails and then figure out the first touch and the last touch. It does kind of depend, I think, there, what your data situation looks like, but that is how I do like to run that activity. And usually what you see, is, at least for the best paying or like your absolute favorite customer cohort, it's based off of both of those, you know, both quantitative and actual qualitative data. I find that what you uncover, especially if it's segment focused, is you usually get like hard yeses and also hard nos. So you get the like, oh man, it's so clear that everyone came in from search, but right. Or you get the like, oh man, like it kind of was really like all over the place or no one really came in from referrals or what have you. And that's kind of where you can start to look at, you know, well, what were you trying to answer in the first place doing this activity? But that is how I like to approach it.
Awesome. Awesome. I have a lot of homework to do. So it really is wonderful to hear. I feel like we're largely kind of on the right track, but we just have a ton of work to do. So that's a good problem to have. I feel pretty decent about it.
Yeah.
Asia, can you give kind of folks an idea of like the types of companies and founders that you typically work with? I mean, I'm sure after this interview, people are going to be like, oh my God, this is great. I'd love to have Asia like on my sideline. Who do you typically work with and kind of what's that good fit look like?
Yeah. I am working with early stage founders. They can be B2B, B2C. They can also be funded, bootstrapped. It really, not that it doesn't matter, but I find that across the board, it's usually a lot of the same challenges. They really need help with marketing. They don't have the time to learn it themselves. They also might actually be executing it on their own, but they just want someone who's been there, done that before. They could be a first-time founder, and this is their very first rodeo, and they're shook, if you will, by the opportunity around marketing and also just overall go-to-market strategy. So I'm working with companies that I've worked with companies that were at 5 customers and we've taken them to 100. I've also worked with companies that were at the multiple thousands of customers and they're trying to figure out how to get to the next big milestone, but they are super overwhelmed and don't have a marketing or a strategy lead when it comes to that. So I am usually hand in hand, right there with them, rolling up my own sleeves, both from a strategic and an execution perspective. And I'm helping them bridge the gap between the marketing team that they wish that they had and what is currently happening today, which is sometimes usually non-existent. I think that the opportunities today that are available to founders who are trying to build businesses and they can't afford full-time marketing, that kind of leaves them in many ways empty-handed, or they've got to go and hire like 10 freelancers and contractors to kind of accomplish what they want. For a certain kind of company, working with me could be a good fit.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. I think what you're doing is wonderful. And yeah, I think folks out there who are listening that that thought this was interesting, reach out to Asia. Asia, what is the best place to kind of have folks reach out to you and chat more about what you're doing?
Yeah. Okay. So if you guys go to demandmaven.io, definitely one of the best places to just reach me, find me in general. But actually there is a marketing strategy call that listeners can take advantage of for free. Just use a promo code CASTOS. Does that work?
Yep, that's great.
Perfect. Yeah, just use promo code CASTOS. You'll get a free marketing strategy call from me. It's an hour. Come pick my brain. Ask me your burning questions. I can also just take a look at what you're currently doing and let you know if you're on the right track or if there's some things that we can brainstorm that that you can start executing on yourself or even more. I mean, it really kind of runs the gamut in terms of what we can talk about. But feel free to take advantage of that. Also, I'm on Twitter quite a lot. I do all the tweeting and lots of gift sharing. So just at Asia Matos on Twitter. So you can also hit me up there if you're there as well.
Awesome. This is a lot of fun, Asia. Thank you so much. We're almost at an hour, which is really long for us these days. I can go for another hour geeking out about marketing. But yeah, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And hope to catch up soon.
Thanks again. This is great.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.